Happy New Year, boy. Do we have a great show to kick off the new year. Sally and I are going to be counting down our seven best picks of 2012. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 269 for January 1st, 2013. And joining me in the new year, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy New Year. And I feel like we should be having party hats on and making noise or something. But
you go ahead.
2013.
Yep. Not a real festive environment that we're in, mostly because we're actually pre-recording this, if the truth be told. So it's not technically 2013, but by the time you're listening to this, it will be. So Happy New Year, everybody. And those of you that have been longtime listeners to the show, or at least one-year listeners to the show, recognize or probably anticipate that we're doing our own little countdown of sorts. Last night was the 60 seconds of the ball dropping in Times Square. We have our own little countdown. We count down our seven best picks of 2012. Our picks are one of the most popular on the show, and one that I certainly enjoy, Sally. I don't know about you, but even though it's sometimes a challenge to go through the year and figure out each week, 52 times, you know, what product or software or website we might recommend, or one that we use ourselves. Most of them are things that we use ourselves. It's a lot of fun. I learn a lot, and I like sharing and talking about it.
I agree, Martin. And it's nice to do this retrospective thing because when we make the picks, maybe it's new things to us. And by now we've had a chance to live with it for a while and know what really, you know, rose to the top of the heap in terms of all those picks we made in 2012.
Yep. So probably without further ado, we should jump into our seven best picks of 2012. Ladies first.
Well, I will lead things off with a Pomodoro productivity. This is a productivity technique I learned about this year, which allows you to get focused. And I've used it in particular using an iPad app called Focus Time. Pomodoro, the name is Italian, I believe it's for tomato. And the concept came from using a 25-minute tomato timer, like a kitchen timer, to time yourself and stay focused on one thing during that time period. And there's all kinds of apps. Like I said, the one I use is Focus Time. I'll have a link in the show notes. But it basically counts down those 25 minutes, and you're motivated to just stay productive on your one task. And then you get a 5-minute break. And after three of these, you get a longer 15-minute break. And in the process, in the app, you earn little stars. It keeps up with how many Pomodoros you've completed. It'll keep stats over time, how many you complete per day. And you can see all kinds of graphs and things like that as well. So I don't use this all the time, Martin, but when I have a big project to get done and I really need to get the nose to the grindstone kind of thing, then this is something that helps me push through. And perhaps it'll be useful for some of our listeners as well.
Well, it certainly has been getting a lot of buzz on the internet and did certainly in 2012. And it sounds like you found a good use for it, a good use case for it that gets you more productive. So we're always about that on the show. And this is a great example. And to each his own, I think that's if it works for you, then wow, that's a great tool and a free tool, right?
That's right. Okay. Can't beat the price.
That's right. Okay, I guess it is my turn, and my seventh pick for 2012, my seventh best pick for 2012 was Camtasia Studio. And Sally, you're a big Camtasia fan as well. You could have easily picked this, and maybe you did a couple years back. But I got up close and personal with Camtasia this year, especially because I was doing some online learning classes for MLC on dynamic presentations. And for each class period, there's three in all, and I taught the class twice in 2012, I recorded a screencast. And this tool is absolutely awesome for doing any kind of screencasting. It'll capture your own video. It will capture, obviously, whatever's on your screen. And you can even say, well, just capture this window or do the whole screen or do a second monitor or all kinds of options there. And then the tool to edit the video, very simple to use interface where you drag and drop audio and video, and you could insert transitions and title slides and very easy then at the back end to actually produce the video. You can send it right up to Screencast. You can send it to YouTube. You can download it to your computer to burn on a disk. Great tool, great utility for especially teachers who want to flip their classrooms as well. So you have the ability to, you know, record the lesson, get that out to the students where they can watch it at home, and then on the flip side, so to speak, then discuss the material in class in that flipped classroom methodology. So not free, unlike yours, Sally. There is a price tag, and it can be depend. I think maybe there is, I don't know if there's educational pricing or not. It's in the 200s someplace, I think, for the tool. But if you do a lot of these kinds of things, it's really indispensable.
Yeah, I would highly recommend the company as a whole, TechSmith. It's a Michigan-based company, and they have great online tutorials and things. They also have a wonderful newsletter. They've started a new newsletter for educators specifically. So if you're looking for ideas along those lines, you can do that. But that's one of the highlights of my inbox. When their newsletter comes, I know I'm going to learn something new and some creative way to use Camtasia. One more trick you can do with Camtasia is narrate PowerPoints. So if you've invested a lot for classroom and PowerPoint, you can easily narrate those and import those into Camtasia and add other things and get them on the web as well. So lots of functionality there with Camtasia. I'm all in with your number 7 pick.
Okay. Your number 6 pick, Sally.
Number 6 for me is a piece of technology that became popular in 2012, a computer actually that you can buy for a mere $35. It's called the Raspberry Pi, not dessert, but Pi like PI the number, and it is a Linux-based machine. It boots off an SD card, and you can plug in full-size monitor and keyboard. There's a Ethernet connection point, so you can add it to the internet. There are USB connectors as well, and then you have the pins that you can use and do programming and connect it to things to control. A very cheap way to have a computer to control something like maybe a TV screen that welcomes people into your school or church and has announcements and things scrolling on it. Cool. Or just to work with in your classroom and help students learn about programming and the Linux-based operating system. You can't beat the price tag. It's a little bit geeky looking. It looks just like a board that you would install on a normal computer, but that's the whole computer. I actually use my cell phone charger to plug in and out of it. That's all it takes is a little small power device, and you're up and running with the Raspberry Pi. So lots of potential here for the dropping prices in computers and the more that people can do with them and customize them to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This is very timely, Sally. I almost ordered one of these last night.
Is that right?
I found an article on, I think it was Lifehacker, that somebody had hooked up their Raspberry Pi to open their garage door via Siri on an iPhone. And my wife has an iPhone with Siri. Well, I suppose you could, you know, make it work with other phones as well. And the reason for that is we've been really having some problems with our garage door opener, where you have to kind of be right up in the face of the garage door for the transmitter to work. And we've had this problem before, which kind of defeats the purpose on a slanted driveway if you got snow on there where you need a running start. So very dangerous environment if you've got those kind of circumstances working against you. And I thought this might be a very cool solution where, especially for my wife, where she could open up her phone, talk to Siri and say, open garage door, and have a Raspberry Pi on the other end actually connected right to the garage door opener and through a relay and send the signal to actually open the door. So I still may do that, although I struggle with the electronic side of things. So hooking that up is a little scary for me. I'm much better on the software side, but I still may do that. So
yeah,
and I may need to ask help from you guys over there
too. Yeah. My husband's at home with a soldering iron in his hand. So this is like right up his alley. And these three little boys are all twinkly eyed looking at dad with that soldering iron. So lots to learn, lots of
okay.
fun.
Is he going
to
be in a Slinger anytime soon?
Send him out for a tech call.
That's right. Can you hook this up, Kevin, to my garage door opener?
Lots of potential. That's the thing. It's a do-it-yourself kind of computer. You can do all kinds of things.
Right, right. Okay, moving on to my pick, my second pick, or number six, and that is a phone. My phone that I purchased in 2012, the Samsung Galaxy S3. And actually, I've been seeing prices over the holidays here for under $100 now through some carriers. So this particular phone is an Android phone. It's got one of the larger screens, 4.7, I want to say. And I had an iPhone before this, and I was struggling a little bit with the size and, you know, my failing eyesight. So this was a natural step for me. But I really, this is very fast, very usable, and a nice form factor for me. I've got decent size hands, so I can get around the screen pretty well, and it's very responsive. It has a removable battery, which the iPhone does not. So that's one thing that that I really like about this particular phone. And it's been very easy to get apps on. It works with the Android Play Store. Here it is in person. Those of you that are watching at home, and very thin. It only comes in blue or white, so I have the white one. And one of my picks also, I think, last year was a screen protector called Zag. And so I put that on top. And I would say that one negative about this phone is that the screen, even though it's Gorilla Glass, just like the iPhone, seems to nick up a little bit more easily than the iPhone. So putting a screen protector on it is probably a good idea. But I get great battery life. I can go a full day without a charge, probably even a day and a half, depending on my usage. It's 4G, and fortunately, Milwaukee is in a 4G area now, so that's great. You get the faster download speeds. And so with the bigger screen, this is a constant companion for Bible class. I load up Lugus on here so I can do word studies. And then obviously just the basic productivity stuff that everybody wants to do on their phones these days, as well as certainly the Wells mobile app comes up nicely on the phone. So
nice plug there.
that is my pick, number six on my list of seven best for 2012.
All right, my number five pick is my Logitech tablet keyboard for my iPad. And I got this for Christmas last year, and this is one piece of hardware I've used faithfully all year long. I just love it. And I didn't think I really needed the stand part of it, but this is actually a two-piece thing. It's got the keyboard, and then the keyboard case expands to be a stand for your iPad. And I found that I use that more than anything. I just love the stand itself. But the keyboard is Bluetooth and wireless, and I like the fact that it's not confining me to stay right there connected to the iPad. I can hold it in my lap or move it around as needed.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just love the functionality of it. I'll give you a quick view of it for those watching online. The stand is kind of triangular shaped, and it has this little piece on the bottom that pops off and folds in, and then you can close it to be the case for the keyboard, and then the keyboard just fits in there perfectly. So I really like it. It's got I think a AA battery in it, and it lasts forever. I've replaced it once just during the year, and I've used it quite a bit. And it's not too heavy. I'm willing to put it in my purse or whatever and drag it along with me if I really think that I have the need to use the keyboard somewhere where I'm traveling or whatever. So definitely a great purchase for me, and one that I've made use of quite regularly this year.
And if I'm not mistaken, that is pretty much a full-size keyboard, right? It's not really shrunk down too much.
Yeah, I'm going to compare it to my. Actually, you're right. It is pretty much a full-size keyboard. When I hover it over my regular keyboard, it's almost identical.
Which
So,
is
yeah.
a little bit different than some of the other ones that are out there, where you got to kind of get used to the smaller typing style. So that's one advantage of having it separate like that. So
Definitely.
cool, very
Yeah.
cool. Yeah,
I
when we
love
were
it.
out at the Chrysler Media Conference in Mankato, when we were sitting together most of that time, you were typing away, and sounds like an indispensable tool if you do any kind of typing on a device like an iPad.
Definitely. And one thing about this, you're not locking your iPad down, so you can do the portrait or landscape view of your iPad. It's not, just the landscape view or the wider view of your iPad on the stand.
Super. Well, I am up next with my pick number five, and that is a little service that Google provides called Google Two-Step Verification. And it works with all Google or most Google services like Gmail or Google Drive or all their mobile apps. And what it is, and you can kind of go back to the show for a little bit more fuller definition, but it is a way that Google helps you keep a little more secure all your stuff, all your online stuff. And a lot of my stuff is on Google. I use Gmail for my personal email, and I have a lot of stuff on Google Drive, those kinds of things. So what this allows you to do is to not only just use a regular password so that you log in and you type your password, but it asks for a second verification, and it asks for a unique code. And that code comes from an app that you can get on your phone. So basically, what it requires is if you're going to log into some of these sites, you need your phone with you. So if your computer or if your account gets hacked or somebody at least finds your password, they would still need your phone as well to get the secondary password or the second step in the verification process. So I'll just, for those of you watching, and I'll describe it for you listeners, on your phone, there's a little app called Authenticator. And when you go into Authenticator, it comes up with a number. And it's a six-digit number, and you can see on the phone here that there's a little countdown on the right side here, and when that countdown is done, that number is no longer valid. So every 60 seconds, it gets refreshed with a new number. So it's very hard for somebody to crack that number, even if, let's say, they're watching the show right now, unless they're a live viewer. They had my password, but then they also had this number. They could get into my account. But since it changes so often, it really increases the security on the phone. LastPass also works with Google Authenticator, so that now on the screen here, you also see that I have a LastPass number, so that if anybody ever wanted to get into my LastPass account, which I really care about because that's got all my other passwords, I really want two-step verification there as well. So it's very difficult to hack either of those accounts because of this second authentication that somebody would need to know both my password and also have possession of my phone at the same time to get into those accounts. It can be a little annoying sometimes because, well, you think, I don't want to have to, go to my phone every time I want to log into Gmail. But what it allows you to do is save it for 30 days, or trust a computer for 30 days, so that when you go in, you can when you enter that number for the first time, it says, "Do you want to remember this for 30 days?" And you can do that, which reduces security just a little bit, but you're only doing it on certain devices or certain computers, and then you can obviously revoke it at any time as well. So if your computer gets stolen, or if your phone gets stolen, you have the opportunity to say, "No more. I'm going to change the password."
These really are smartphones these days because
Yeah.
I remember it's probably been about 10 years ago. My husband worked for IBM and he had a little fob that did the same thing where
Yep.
he got the number off the fob.
They still
And
do those. Yep. And I
now they've
remember
pushed
working
that
too.
down to smartphones. That's
They
pretty
have,
neat.
yeah. And those RSA cards are still in use in enterprises, and they essentially do the same thing. So
All right. I think it's my turn, and we're down to number four in the countdown of seven best of 2012. And my number four was a pick called freebibleimages.org. We've referenced this many times throughout the year once we discovered this site, because it's exactly what it says. It's really high quality and free images from the Bible. And what I'm most excited about are their photographic JPEG quality images, but they also have clip art images of Bible stories as well. That I have on the screen now, for those of you that are watching the video, is just a representation of the photo quality images available for the Christmas story. And you can download these for free. You can download them in different formats. You can download them as PowerPoint slides and different things, and then make use of them. And you're really not limited in how you can make use of them, as long as it's for ministry purposes. And so a wonderful resource, and they're constantly growing the archive of available Bible images and stories that they have there. So check out freebibleimages.org.
Yeah, you've referenced this a number of times on the show, Sal. A great, valuable resource for anybody looking for that kind of thing, whether it be in a Bible class presentation or for a sermon or whatever. And you're right, they are real quality images and real actors. So it's not, let's say, a cartoonish approach. They really add a little bit of a new dynamic to the presentation. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick number four is another Google product, Google Drive. And I mentioned when I was talking about Google two-step verification that Google Drive is one of those apps that requires it or can require it, so that keeps it a little bit safer. But this is essentially where I store all of my personal documents. So I anteed up for the, I think it's $50 a year for, I forget how many gigs, 50 gigs, something like that, 75 gigs, 100 gigs, I don't remember. I haven't used it up yet. But basically everything that I have in digital format is on Google Drive. And so I'm trusting Google with a lot there. But so all the receipts that I get over the course of the year, my tax stuff, I scan that stuff in, any documents that, and you can upload any kind of document you want, whether it's a Microsoft document, Google document, you know, whatever. They can all go up to Google Drive. Google Drive offers some very good searching capabilities now, where it will scan PDFs, it'll scan Word docs, and you can search within a document. So it becomes very easy to find what you're looking for through Google Drive. And one of the other neater parts about Google Drive is that it's available on mobile devices. So if you have an iPhone or an Android phone like I do, they have their Google Drive app, so you can pull up any document you want at any time, you know, wherever you are. It can be on an iPad, whatever. You can also now create create content through the online or through the mobile apps as well. They just launched, I think, a couple weeks ago, the ability to edit spreadsheets. We used Google Drive for our Christmas list this year. So Debbie and I sat down, put together a document on Google Drive, Google spreadsheet, and she was able to pull that up in the store, and I was able to work on it at home or whatever. And we worked off of that list collaboratively. We both added our, you know, the people that we wanted to get gifts for and what our ideas were, and, you know, checked them off the list and said, you know, you're getting this and I'm getting that, and worked really well. So lots of application and ministry applications for cloud storage like Google Drive. So that is my number four pick of 2012.
Well, thanks for taking the time to describe how you're using it, because I've used it, but I can see lots of potential, just like Google Calendar has kind of become indispensable to me and to our family and our church and our school for the collaborative nature of calendaring. Right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, more and more moving those documents to the web is the way to go.
Big time tool for classrooms and any school using Google Apps. That's really the centerpiece of what you're doing. That's how kids submit assignments and how they collaborate on documents and so on and so forth.
All right, moving on. Number three for me was something really exciting I got to participate in this past year, and that was Math Counts. And I learned about math counts through a local Lutheran elementary school, St. Paul's in New Ulm, had been participating. And as it turned out, we started a math counts team here in Sleepy Eye. And it was just a really great program to be a part of. They give you wonderful resources for starting a math club. So even if you don't want to participate in the competitive nature of math counts, you can start a math club at your school, and they give you free resources. And at the end of the year, they'll send you a beautiful trophy. I should have had a picture of our kids with our trophy, but just for meeting each week. And our kids were eager. They're looking for activities to do. So why not meet after school once a week and do math? And it's really fun math. They have a whole arsenal of videos. They come out with a new video each month explaining these really complex math things in terms that kids can understand. And their scores in math are just going up and up, not just for math counts, but also for Meet Math, sponsored through Martin Luther College. Very similar kind of questions that are involved in both programs. But Math Counts is a national program sponsored by a lot of engineering-oriented organizations. And here in Minnesota, the Society for Professional Engineers sponsors the state meet. And I actually was fortunate enough to take one of my kids to compete at state. And he did really well. I was really excited to be a part of it. It was a wonderful event and just really motivational for kids that are inclined this way. And being a tech podcast, I think it fits right in. We need to develop those math and just all STEM skills for our students as they're growing up, so they're not intimidated by math. And I've got kids coming that aren't that great at math, and they're excited about math counts. They get free t-shirts. They got a free USB drive when they went to the competition at the regional level. And they just get really excited about having fun with math. I think it's a great program. They also run a video competition called Real Math, where they encourage the clubs to make videos and submit, and you can make it to the national competition with your videos as well. So lots of cool and fun things around math education. It's geared for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. So all you Wells teachers out there that are listening, I encourage you to look into Math Counts. It's at mathcounts.org.
Very cool, Pitt. And you're definitely right. I just saw a study released maybe this past month about the increasing decline, you know, of our math and science skills, and how the world has sped past us, and that other countries' kids are, you know, smarter than ours, at least in this area. And that puts our country obviously in a difficult position. We were always the leader in those areas, and we've kind of fallen away from that. So anything we can do to encourage our kids to do that, and this is a great tool to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to my, what are we at, number three now? Mm-hmm. My number three pick for 2012 is also a keyboard cover for the iPad. This is a Logitech Ultra Thin keyboard cover. And all the things you said, Sally, about your iPad keyboard cover and or your keyboard really go for this as well. I think it's anybody that's using an iPad for any length of time recognizes that, boy, just using the onboard keyboard, the virtual keyboard, it can be frustrating. Especially for somebody who's kind of a touch typist and wants to input content quickly. So what I like about this is, first of all, it's a cover, so it fits right over the iPad itself, so it's exactly the same size. And in fact, the one that I have is exactly the same material. So it's the silver anodized paint that they have on here, the surface, whatever it is. And then it's got the magnetic spine, so it opens like a book and closes like the magic covers or whatever they're called. And so that when you open it, and there goes my iPad, it's you know, it's very thin, so it's not heavy at all. It's actually very light. It's charged via mini USB, or micro USB, I should say. And so it's got a rechargeable battery, and this battery lasts a long time all by itself, but so you don't need to plug in batteries, which adds to its lightness and thinness as well. Then it has a little track in the middle of it that allows you to place the iPad in it so that it props up all by itself, and then you type away. The only downside that I would say, and it works via Bluetooth, so that, and just like yours, Sally, the only downside that I've found is that the keyboard is a little small, so it's not a full-size keyboard, so you have to get used to a little bit smaller keyboard. But if you do any typing for any period of time, you get used to that pretty quickly. So the size obviously is limited by the width of the iPad. And you can actually put the iPad in portrait or landscape mode. You're not locked into one or the other. But again, just like your pick, similar pick, I don't think I could really live with, use the iPad very efficiently without this kind of keyboard. Now, I believe it sells, and you can get it on Amazon for like $89. I bought it for about there as well. So that's a good pickup, especially if you're an iPad user. And I think they have a couple different versions, different colors, and it needs to fit obviously a couple different sizes of iPads as well. So,
yeah, I'm excited by that because I really like the cover aspect of it. I think that you want to protect that screen, and I'm always sticking my iPad in my purse to carry it somewhere, and I think having the cover is a definite benefit there. And I didn't realize, I thought you had to kind of dock it in that track, but really the iPad could be somewhere else. You can be disconnected since it's using Bluetooth. So I was under kind of a different impression of that one.
Yeah, it's not a dock at all. It's just a track that props it up.
So. Okay, excellent, great pick.
You're number two. We're getting close to the top, Sally. So these are getting better and better.
Yeah, this one especially, Martin. I know you're going to think is better and better because this is like your favorite one. Okay, so this would probably make Martin's worst list if we were doing worse. But my number two pick is Pinterest, and I would say Pinterest stormed the world this year. It was probably the fastest growing and biggest buzz of all the social media sites for this year. Not that Facebook wasn't continuing to grow and everything, but Pinterest was really new and coming of age in 2012. And for those of you that haven't experienced Pinterest, it's a way to save imagery by pinning it or tagging it onto a board on your account. And then that's shared through your account with the people that follow you. I'm reminded of the book we read, Martin, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was the one that quoted heavily from Marshall McLuhan. McLuhan. And they talked about the
change power of electronic culture.
Thank you very much, by Shane Hipps. And they talked in that in that book about the change from written text to imagery and how imagery is becoming more and more powerful in our culture. And I think Pinterest attests to that fact, that it is a pleasurable experience to us in the 21st century to look at images and glean things from them. Yep. So not to be left out, Wells Tech has a Pinterest board, and you can be part of that Pinterest board. You can pin to it and share with other Wells Tech listeners. So just follow us and we'll add you as a potential pinner on the Wells Tech board. And I think we found some good things coming out of that. It's new and slow growing maybe, but also lots of potential there. I think a lot of ministry outlets are using it as well to share the gospel in image format. So churches have Pinterest boards where they pin infographics or things that have God's word on them. So lots of potential.
I guess I would have to agree, Sally.
Oh, my goodness.
Not that I'm a huge pinner. I mean, I'm in there once in a while, but I believe that there is, it's probably still finding its niche as far as a ministry tool, and different organizations are using it in different ways. But I believe you're absolutely right. Imagery is very powerful And this is really all about the image, right? You really don't, it wouldn't exist. Its sole purpose is to share images and thoughts about those images.
Right. And I probably didn't explain it well enough, but you can click on the images and click through and read articles that are behind those. But right. And one more mention, teachers are using it quite heavily and sharing a lot of classroom resources, especially lower elementary, where there's a lot of tactile kind of projects and things like that, worksheets and things like that. I see the teacher population really taking off with Pinterest. So if you're a teacher that's listening and you haven't explored it, it might be a good place to take a look.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Debbie, my wife, who teaches fifth through eighth grade art at Peace in Hartford, is constantly scouring Pinterest for art types of ideas and projects mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. That's really her go-to place right now. So,
yeah, great resource.
Yep. Okay, now I'm down to my second pick of 2012 of my seven best, and that is... little surprise here. The book that Sally and I have been reviewing all year, or not all year, but the last half of 2012, and will continue into 2013, and that's Presentation Zen. We referenced this, I think, a couple shows ago where we got a retweet from the author, Gar Reynolds, and that's great. This is the textbook that I use to teach my MLC class, my online MLC class called Dynamic Classroom Presentations. And really, this is a great book for anybody just interested in improving their presentation skills. It's not only about design, it's about preparation, it's about delivery, it's about the planning process. It has, you know, some good basic design principles like the rule of thirds and white space and headline development and developing speaker notes and, you know, all those kinds of things, handouts, etc. And it's a beautifully designed book as well, as you would guess. And so it's probably a must have for anybody that's interested in doing presentations. So whether that be from the pulpit or in the classroom or missionaries on furlough doing presentations, this is a great book to put on your shelf. It sells for $35. You can probably get cheaper ones. You can actually get it on a Kindle as well for a little bit cheaper, I believe, but highly recommend this particular book called Presentation Zen. So that's why it's number two on my list.
You know, I think probably everybody that's listened has been to conferences and different events of that nature and seen some keynote speakers that have probably knocked your socks off. And I like to kind of sit back and analyze what it is that they're doing, why their presentations are so much better than other things that I see. And I think Gar has done a great job of capturing and explaining those kind of concepts in this book. And so if you want to take your presentations to the next level, I definitely agree with your number two choice, Martin. It's been a great learning experience for me. So,
all right. Now we probably need a drum roll or something for now is the time that Sally is going to do the great reveal of her number one pick, the best pick of her 2012 52 picks. What is it, Sally?
Notice my big monkey grin, because my pick is PicMonkey. It's an online Web 2.0 tool for image editing and collage making, and I fell in love with PicMonkey this spring, mainly because something Google did. Google bought out my favorite image editing site called Picnic and shuttered it. And kind of incorporated the Picnic tool set into their Google Plus tools. And mm-hmm. so my life was void of an online image editor. I didn't know what to do. And along came the monkey. And I've been a PicMonkey fan ever since. And I actually teach and developed a brand new course for MLC this year called Online Image Editing, where I relied heavily on teaching my students how to use PicMonkey for cropping and resizing, just basic image edits, for doing things like adding text over your image, perhaps for your website or whatever. And also for all kinds of different filters and things that you can do. And finally, for the collage making techniques. And I have a picture of that on the screen for those of you that are watching the video. Drag and drop collage making and resizing and lots of creativity available with the PicMonkey tool. So hands down, easy pick for me. Number one in 2012 was PicMonkey.
So is this the tool you were using, Sally, for your daily collages that you're posting on Facebook in December?
For many of them. I have I have some collage making tools on my iPad as well, but that I made use of. But for many of the collages I did all throughout December, I was right there on PicMonkey creating those.
Yeah. Yep. These online editors are just awesome, and they do a lot of that hard work for you, and they can really make some questionable pictures look a lot better by, you know, adjusting the exposure, doing cropping, and then especially for any of you webmasters, taking these larger pictures and shrinking them down to a more usable size for your application on your website is just an invaluable tool, and all for free.
Yeah, I love the price tag. I do recommend it to our final web users because on their homepage, typically they're going to include some splash type images, and they have to be sized very precisely to exact pixel counts. And you can do that easily with PicMonkey.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I like your pick.
Thanks.
All right. My final pick of the 2012 pick season is actually the tool we're using right now, Sally, and that's Google Hangouts. This has this probably has more ministry applications than we could probably count. Obviously, we're using it on the Wells Tech podcast for a couple of reasons. One, I believe it's one of the most stable video conferencing solutions out there. We rarely have any problems with the video coming through. Both you and I did a course this summer, an online training course for Final Web, where it was three straight days of mm-hmm. Google Hangouts. And, you know, barring just a couple of small glitches, everybody was able to get on. Everybody was able to stay on. You can see each other. As you can see from our own podcast, it's smart enough to follow the speaker. So when somebody's speaking, that particular camera comes up. They've added all kinds of other features that we haven't even begun to explore. One of the things that allowed us to actually go video with this podcast, Sally, was the streaming portion that they added. So you can broadcast now to YouTube mm-hmm. directly, and also it records it at the same time. So obvious ministry applications there. If you wanted to do a Bible class or a sermon or service, you could easily do that through Google Hangouts. Confirmation class for, you know, all kinds of distance learning applications. You can see, obviously, that you can, you know, share screens. So it's a tool that makes a lot of sense in a lot of different ways. I'll just actually share our Google Hangout screen, and you get the weird picture in a picture in a picture. But you can see around the top that we have the ability to screen share. We have chat. You can invite people. You can also invite people from landlines. So it could be an audio conferencing tool through using Google Voice, and there's no charge for that as well. So it's a tool that's growing. And one that made a big splash here in 2012 that took the Wells Tech podcast to the next level.
Right where we wanted to be. No, I'm excited. I'm excited about Google Hangouts as well and all the potential of connecting, and at a great price tag. It's free.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sally, that was our seven best. I don't know if everybody agrees with us, but that's just us. And, you know, that's where we were in 2012. Who knows where we'll be in 2013? Whole new series of apps and hardware and software out there that are fair game. And I'm looking forward to ramping it up again next week.
Yeah, I am really excited about what 2012 had to give us, and it's been a great year, and who knows what's going to be invented and the next big thing around the corner. So yeah,
the fact that we could pick seven things that we're using pretty much day in and day out is a testament to some of the quality that's coming out now too.
Definitely.
So, and hopefully that was a help and to our listeners. Mm-hmm. Sally, next week we're going to actually return to the book presentations then, and we're going to look at chapter 5. So those of you following along, you may want to read through chapter 5 of presentations then for next week. That's our book review. So we continue that series in 2013. And we want to close the show while we're still in the Christmas season with some more Christmas music, Mary Did You Know, by Kevin Lerch. Actually, a little bit of... What's the word you use for a little bit something extra?
Langyap.
Yep. Langyap for our listeners this week as well. That I ran across an intro or a trailer video for a new Bible miniseries coming up on the History Channel in March of 2013 here, called The Bible. They did a little bit of a trailer using this same song, Mary Did You Know, by CeeLo Green, who is one of the hosts of The Voice, which is one of my wife's favorite shows. But he does a beautiful rendition of Mary Did You Know as well. So we're going to play Kevin's version and then check out the show notes if you want to view the trailer for this new series with the same music. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Welcome to 2013. We look forward to more shows, many more shows with you this year.
Would someday walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you that your baby boy would give sight to a blind man. Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm a storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? When you kissed your that your baby boy